Good morning, Chief Justice, honorable members of this court. May it please the court, my name is Rod Portis. I represent Jay Amaya in these proceedings, and what we are asking is that this matter be sent back to the district court on remand for correct findings, or alternatively, reversed. And I want to begin with the standard of review. And the standard of review is actions under the DNA Testing Act are addressed to the discretion of the trial court, and this court will not disturb the trial court's findings unless there is an abuse of discretion. Further, the trial court's findings will be upheld in the absence of clear error. Now, that's a deferential standard. In the brief, I cited the State versus Myers. I think you're going to hear State versus Myers right after me. But I bring up State versus Myers because in that case, this court held that we're not going to deal with the credit that you get under the deferential standard if the underlying court didn't apply the proper level of analysis when it made the findings of facts that are in the case. And here I think there are three problems with how the court applied the standard review, which takes away the deferential standard. The first is when we get to a DNA case, we have a quantum of evidence for the testing, and then we get to the tests, and then what do we do with the results? And one of the questions is whether or not a person's entitled to exoneration. And in that, the cases have set out a two-part standard for that. The first part is whether there's a lack of an element that's clearly shown, okay? And that is what the district court used in its holding below. But what the court didn't use is the second part. It says, if the evidence is doubtful in character and completely lacking in probative value. Now, that doesn't appear in the court's order. That's on page 6 of the court's order. And it only relied on the first one, which gets only half the analysis. And it's important in this case because we have a co-defendant that's slipping on another co-defendant and putting all the blame upon that co-defendant's shoulder. And if that person, who is the sole person from the bulk of the evidence against the defendant, if that person's character is so lacking in probative value that you can't rely on that person, then we have evidence that goes towards the exoneration. And we would want the district court to start talking about that and how it applied the case. A second problem.
Let me ask you about, is it a question that the witness's testimony is inconsistent with other facts or just merely at odds with the defendant's theory?
It is inconsistent with the facts, and it's important because it's the narrative of the conviction and the sentence. It's his story that sets forth what each person did and why each person should be held accountable for the law and how each person should be punished.
And would the DNA be inconsistent with that narrative?
It is, Your Honor.
How?
The DNA is inconsistent with the narrative in a couple of ways. The easiest one is the bottle of beer on the front porch, where DNA tested showed Michael Long's DNA is on the mouth of that bottle. Michael Long, in his stories to the law enforcement, consistently denied ever drinking any of Sherry Fuhrer's beer. And it was Sherry Fuhrer's beer, we know from the UPC labels, throughout the house, the other 54 bottles that they seized, and this one matched just like that. And
was
now that his known? DNA is on that. And so,
was that known at the time of trial? That Long lied about where he got the beer?
There was no trial. And Your Honor, that leads me to the second problem with the standard of review in this case, is that on page 7 of the order of the district court refers to the former trial. And there was no trial. It was a no contest plea. And at sentencing, the statement of facts is going to rely on the statements of Michael Long. And the question here isn't whether or not he gets a new trial, it's whether or not he gets the opportunity to withdraw his plea and go forward on the charges, or alternatively, to get a new sentence. And that brings up the third and final problem with whether or not the district court properly applied the standards before it.
Before you go on, can I interrupt and take you back to the beer bottle just for a minute? Is it your argument that if Mr. Long lied about the beer bottle, he lied about everything? Is that the logic of it, or is it something else?
Well, Let me back up, Judge. If I had completely answered your question the first time, this might be easier. In addition to that beer bottle where he lied, and now we have scientific evidence of a lie, whereas that didn't exist at the time the plea was taken and at the time he was sentenced. In addition to that, we had Mr. Long saying, oh, by the way, he slit her throat with the steak knife, put it in a bottle, threw it out on the field on a drive elsewhere. So you go out to that field. You find that steak knife, you find that bottle, you find Sherry Fuhrer's, the victim's blood all over that. But what you don't find is Jeremiah's DNA.
Or anyone else's.
No, they find, yes, they
the
find
victims.
The victim.
And no one else's.
And no one else's.
So how is that, combined with the lying about a beer bottle, how does that get us to exculpatory or exonerating evidence?
That's what the record is, Judge.
Right, but I'm trying to make the connection, and I'm just not sure I understand.
Well, and I'm trying to make an argument upon that, because that's all the facts I have, Judge.
Right.
And so with the bottle, I now have scientific evidence that Michael Long lied. That scientific evidence didn't exist at the time of trial. There was no trial. It didn't exist at the time the plea was taken.
So the beer bottle DNA supports the argument that Michael Long lied about the beer bottle. How does the DNA, the absence of either Long's or Amaya's DNA on the knife and the other bottle support anything like that?
Your Honor, the argument is that his touch DNA should have been upon that bottle, that Jay Amaya's DNA should have been there. Because the narrative from Mr. Long is that the person that's doing all these terrible deeds is Jay Amaya. And it's a narrative that keeps pushing more and more of the culpable conduct upon Jay Amaya. You know, from the sexual, from the beatdowns to the knife.
What is your authority that if someone touches an object, they leave DNA traces?
That is the argument we have presented for the facts, Judge. Right now I'm arguing that we don't get to decide whether or not the historical facts are accurate, because the court didn't apply the proper standard of review. And I want to supplement that argument. I have wrong standard on exoneration. I have the use of the former trial, because there was no trial, so you question whether or not he's accurate there. But the third one is whether or not he considered it as a sentencing issue. And I go back to Judge Rawlins, who had the case when the testing was ordered. And he ordered the testing because he wanted to find out if there was a problem with the distribution of culpability in this case that would warrant a new sentence. And that's why he ordered the new testing. We get the test results, and I'm arguing to the new judge that this should establish new sentencing because we have a change in the circumstances that display who did what and who did how much in this case, such that when the sentencing court had the idea that it was all Mr. Maya that did it, that was wrong. It was actually Mr. Long. And so I was seeking a new sentence.
If you get a new sentencing, will your client be exposed to the death penalty?
Your Honor, the way it would work, we're attacking the judgment, and he would get a chance to withdraw his plea. And the short answer is yes, he would. But there are alternative ways of doing this, too, because we have a first-degree murder count, we have a use count, and we have a sexual assault count. With the first-degree murder count, Judge Rawlins was saying, well, maybe this is a second-degree murder and not a first, and then you're going to have to get rid of the conviction no matter what to get to that, if you wanted to adjust that sentence. But if you were looking at this kind of like a State versus Winslow issue...
So would that make the judge the prosecutor?
Would that make the judge the prosecutor?
How can the judge say, this is really a second-degree murder, we're going to sentence you on second-degree murder?
I understand the question, and I raise that in my brief, the same thing. I'm not sure that the judge can do that. But if you take away the conviction, then you can go forward, and you face the death penalty, you face the new charges, the client was willing to face those consequences. But if you don't touch, even if you don't touch the first-degree murder sentence, Judge, you can touch the sexual assault and the use counts. You could order resentencing on those.
What's the testimony, or not the testimony, what does the record show about the sexual assault? What's the theory by Long? What's the DNA?
The theory by Long is that somebody shoved a tire axle up the vagina of the victim during the beating of her, and that after that they slit her throat with a steak knife. And he alleges that JMI is the one that did that.
And what DNA is there relative to the sexual assault?
There was no DNA tested relative to the sexual assault beyond a bite mark. And so the bite mark was tested first, determined to be Mr. Amaya's DNA. And then the question became at the July hearing, the first hearing on motion to dismiss, what to do with that. And the arguments were presented that the victim and Mr. Amaya had had intimate contact shortly before the incidents involving her death.
So we were referring sort of like a Winslow fact pattern, but Winslow, White and Winslow, the testimony was White and Winslow raped the victim and nobody else did it. That's why I'm asking you with respect to the sexual assault, what is the evidence, and we're, you know, in this DNA world here, jurisprudentially.
Your Honor, I am out of time. May I have permission to answer?
You may answer.
Thanks. Your Honor, it is different in respect to Winslow in that you're looking for sperm in Winslow and the DNA as to whether Winslow or White are the people that did it, and ultimately somebody completely different did it. But when this court decided Winslow, that's what it was looking at, was whether it was Winslow or whether it was White. And so to the extent that
that was at the threshold question of whether or not DNA testing should be ordered, right?
Well,
which under the statute, I dare say, isn't that difficult to get a DNA test.
I agree that that is certainly accurate as to the status of the Winslow case. I would say that this court went beyond the testing standards of review to determine whether or not test, that they addressed some other matters, and that you went to such things as whether or not you could have a plea-based issue involved in the DNA Testing Act at all. And then you went beyond that to talk about what the standards should be if it's an issue of sentencing. And you use the evidence raising serious doubt regarding such testimony could be favorable to Winslow and relevant to a claim that he was wrongfully convicted. That is, even if Winslow was placed at the scene of the crime, and such evidence excluding Winslow as a contributor would also be relevant to a claim by Winslow that he was less culpable than the sentencing court had believed him to be, and therefore he was wrongfully sentenced. And, Your Honor, that is the basis of this appeal, that it is Long that is the more culpable person, yet that is how the judge sentenced the case was with, as Mr. Amaya.
Counsel, even if the statute... Well, Chief, I know we're out of time. May I ask another question?
You may ask another question.
Counsel, even if the DNA testing statutes authorize DNA testing if something may implicate the sentence, is it your position that 29-4123 also affords relief of resentencing? Because I don't see that in the express language of the statute.
Okay. It's going to take a time to answer this. I mean, let me go through the act as best we could. Number one, the answer to that has already been made in this court in State versus Winslow. We went through the analysis.
But that was addressed to the first element. Do you get the test? Well, not what is the available relief, right?
No, Your Honor, I disagree with that. Because it talked about whether sentencing could possibly be an available relief and whether or not it had to be just a conviction after a trial. And it surveyed the states and it came to the conclusion that in Nebraska, that OR language in 4120/5 is important and it is significant. And then we've had other cases since that, Judge, where we've talked about the cases and used the act and said we're going to do sentencing as well. And I'm understanding the court's question to be whether or not the DNA Act allows testing.
My question wasn't, are you allowed testing on that basis? It's, are you allowed the relief of resentencing? It's either exoneration or a new trial if a separate motion for new trial is made. I see nothing about the relief of resentencing. And so if I'm, that's my question.
And my answer to that would again, to go to State versus Winslow, State versus Pratt talks about culpability, and State versus Rogers talks about the relief of sentencing as well.
Thank you.
And I would say that if you call it a judgment as opposed to a conviction, then you can afford a way to deal with the judgment under the new testing act, I'm sorry, the new trial act procedures. May I be excused?
You may be excused. Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
May I please the court, counsel? My name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. The state's overall position, as argued in brief, is that the district court correctly sustained the state's motion to dismiss because the DNA test results do not exonerate or exculpate Amaya. Respectfully, Mr. Cordes is wrong. The district court did make findings, and the correct findings on that. The court found it was utterly unable to find that any of the DNA test results provide such pertinent and vital information that would exonerate or exculpate the defendant, and the court said that right after it recited the correct standard. So the state submits to the district court was correct. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on my argument with regards to actually DNA test results because I think the district court was correct. I don't think that the beer bottle on the front porch in which had Mr. Long's DNA is material in any way to Mr. Amaya's guilt. As to the knife and the other beer bottle found in the field, the DNA analysis revealed a mixture of two individuals. The victim was not excluded as the major. That's not surprising. And as to the minor contributors, they were inconclusive. And those inconclusive results do not exculpate or exonerate Amaya, as this court said in State versus Pratt, inconclusive results do not exonerate or exculpate defendants. So I'd like to spend the majority of my argument today, and I hope to focus on the relief that the DNA Testing Act provides for and the relief that it does not, as Justice Stacey brought up. My argues not only that the district court should have vacated the judgment, but he also argues two additional alternative forms of relief, that he should be resentenced or that he should get a trial, even though his convictions are plea-based. And the state's position is the DNA Testing Act does not provide for either. Section 294123 is what I'll term the relief statute of the DNA Testing Act. It provides that a court can vacate and set aside the judgment and release the person from custody, or two, grant the person a new trial pursuant to the new trial statutes at 292101 through 292103. So there are two forms of relief under the Act, and resentencing and withdrawal of a plea in order to proceed to trial, or I guess to reconsider pleading, are not one of them. And for a person like Amaya who pled and did later receive DNA testing, the only possible form of relief is release from custody under subsection 2 of section 294123. I know that this court has previously found that DNA testing applies to wrongful sentence claims, but as Justice Stacey's pointed out, those cases were about whether DNA testing should have been granted in the first place under 294120 subsection 5 of the DNA Testing Act, and the state does not dispute the defendants with plea-based convictions should be able to use the DNA Testing Act to prove their innocence. That was the purpose of the Act. The legislative intent says that, and the legislative intent is supported by the legislative history on that. But the Act is not meant for, and more importantly, does not provide relief for, a defendant who merely disputes his or her degree of culpability. It's as to actual or legal innocence, not I didn't do as much as my co-defendant in committing this offense. I also know that this court has held that the motion for new trial statutes apply to those defendants who entered pleas. Because a court enters a verdict of conviction, as it is used in 292101.
Have we also held otherwise? Have we been consistent on that point?
No, Your Honor, and that was my next point. I think the earliest case saying, holding that a defendant who enters a plea can file a motion new trial is Day v. Price. And in that same year, less than a month apart, the court held in State v. Kluge that a defendant could not because a guilty plea waived all defenses.
Which do you think is the correct or more principled approach if you were required to pick one?
Absolutely Kluge. And I submit that for really four reasons. And I think when you read the available grounds under the new trial statute, read as a whole, they infer that a trial happened in the first place. You can't, logically, I don't think you can get a new trial if you didn't have one. And we also have laws and standards in place for when defendants want to move to withdraw their pleas. We have them before sentencing, we have after sentencing but before final judgment, and we have after final judgment with the common law. And I don't know what the purpose for that law would be or the distinguishing standards if a defendant can use the motion for new trial statutes to use them to withdraw their plea. And three, allowing defendants to file motions for new trial, I think undercuts the plea agreement process. I think it undercuts this court's precedent, longstanding precedent, that a defendant waives all defendants when they plead. And four, if you shepherdize Kluge, you'll find that state and, I mean, almost, I think, the majority of the federal courts agree with Kluge. And so there is supporting authority. I did not find anything in support of Price, other than this court's progeny, which I would ask this court to overrule Price and its progeny in that sense, and to adopt and to say that Kluge is the correct standard, and that a defendant cannot, who has plea-based convictions, cannot use motion new trial statutes.
Do you understand Mr. Amaya to have been asking for a new trial in this case?
Well, as
there wasn't a motion for a new trial made.
No, there wasn't. And I, hearing Mr. Cordes today, I think just wants to reconsider whether to plead again, perhaps. Go back to square one, which we're under the DNA Testing Act. And I think that goes back to my original argument is, well, you've had the testing. Here are your two forms of relief. You are either exonerated and you're released from custody. That's it, like the Beatrice Six. Or you get to file a motion for new trial, which he pled, so my position is he doesn't get to. That's it. If he wants to file a motion to withdraw his plea, he can do that, but that's not how we're here before this court today. And I don't think it would succeed anyways because it would be a common law and it doesn't meet any of the required standards under the common law, but that would be the remedy to pursue, I suppose. There are no further questions?
In your brief, you had an argument that a portion of 29-41-20 interpreted literally would produce an absurd result.
I think, yes, when it says wrongfully convicted or sentenced, I think that this court can replace that or with an and. I think that would, in order to read it harmoniously with the relief section of 29-41-23, this court could certainly do that. I think it's a proper statutory method of construction, whereas inserting a whole new form of relief into 29-41-23 would not be. So if this court would seek to read those two sections harmoniously, I think that would be an avenue to do so.
Do we need to decide that here where this isn't a 41-20 case, the testing's been granted, and we're just talking about relief, correct?
Correct. I think you wouldn't have to go into 29-41-20 subsection 5, but I think, and I don't want to say advisory, because the court's not supposed to issue advisory opinions, but I think district courts, as Judge Rowlands, you could tell from this case, may believe that resentencing especially is a possibility and when they're deciding whether or not to even grant testing in the first place.
Is it possible that wrongful sentence is a basis to grant testing, but the relief just doesn't match up with that and you're limited to...
I think that would lead to an absurd result. I don't think the legislature, I don't think they can say wrongful conviction or sentence and then in the relief statute say, but we're not going to provide any form for the or sentence part. I think to...
What if the relief is a new trial?
Well, after you, you can if you don't have plea-based convictions.
Sure, and I'm
sure. Sure, but I think if you read wrongfully convicted and sentenced, it covers that as well.
Isn't that what Mr. Cordes was arguing, was that the resentencing, if any, would be available relief under the new trial framework? At least that's what I understood.
Yes, order for that to happen, he has to be able to file a motion for a new trial, and I'm saying the statutes don't allow for that because he pled.
So you're circling back to the Price-Clooney dilemma.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, for those reasons, the state asks this court to find that the DNA Testing Act does not provide relief for mere wrongful sentence claims, nor does it provide relief in the form of a trial on a plea-based conviction, and we also ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day, then, is State versus Myers. Justice Frydenberg is also recused from this matter.